I remember the last time I saw you, Will. Graduation day. The Princeton class of 1905. I shouldn't have gone. Not entitled to. Being neither a relative nor a graduate myself. Might have been embarrassing if somebody had remembered me. But you were the only one who did. I just couldn't stay away. Like knowing someone you love is cheating on you. Instead of letting go, you put yourself where you'll see the two of them. Or like when you've seen something terrible and it keeps calling you back.
Terrapin!
Carter. You'd best get back to it, Carter. You'll miss the Princeton carousel.
I saw you. Whew. Forgive me while I catch my breath. I saw you over here by yourself. Oh, come on, sport. You join in. They'll strike up the carousel any moment. You mustn't miss the dance.
Well, thank you, Carter. I'd rather watch. Don't feel qualified. Actually, I'm not, of course.
Oh, come on, old sport. It's not a day for being down. The sun's out. The girls are out. It's a big day. It's a big country. And I feel huge. No more lectures. No more worrying about Greek.
I haven't worried about Greek for over a year. The sun and the girls may be out, but they're not for the dropaways.
Oh, my dear fellow, don't fret about that. You're still one of us. How are your family?
My father died. Another attack.
Oh, I'm very sorry. How's your mother taking it?
She'll manage. She's got pretty good at managing. She'll go to her sister in Boston when she's well enough.
And you, Terrapin, what will you do?
Please don't call me that.
Oh, sorry. I had no idea it was a problem. Terrapin is just a nickname, nothing intended, you know. Terrapin because it's so darn hard getting anything out of you. Just affection, really. Sorry. So, Arnold, what will you do?
There's no point hanging around here anymore. You'll all disperse to the four corners. It's been like the day after summer term for me for a year now. Guess it's time to go home. Only thing is, where's home? Railroads, maybe.
Oh, good idea. Railroad stock just keeps going on up.
Not stock. Real railroad work. Out west, out in the wilds.
Oh, engineering. Odd thing for a Bachelor of Arts. But then you're not really a Bachelor of Arts.
No, not a Bachelor of Arts, not an engineer either, no. Pushing sentence structures around, marshalling those prepositions, isn't so different from a marshalling yard in Wyoming.
Come on, my love.
Cecily, yes, now let me introduce
no,
you.
No, time, is... come on. We've got to join the dances. You really can't miss it, William.
Whatever you decide, Rogers, drop me a line through the college. Once you've settled, I'd like to hear where you end up.
Sure, Carter, sure.
Oh, William, do hurry along.
Rogers, see you again, old sport.
Yes. Yes, see you. Goodbye.
The Affair at Grover Station by Jonathan Holloway, based on the short story by Willa Cather. With Kerry Shale as Arnold Rogers, Stuart Milligan as Will Carter, and Tom Watt as Mr. Framark.
Precisely because this is a freight-only train. I understand why the guard decided to be difficult about these instruments and such like. Oh, Oh, what a view. Bleak and beautiful, perfectly flat in every direction. Just the rail and the telegraph wire stretching into infinity. Well, guess I'll have to ride out here, keep company with my gear. And, you too, if you don't mind.
Why should I?
Well, I see by your uniform you're a railroad man.
Station cashier, Cheyenne.
Oh, Cheyenne. A lot of history tied up in a name like that.
You could say.
I'm headed for Sterling, Colorado.
I know where Sterling is.
Ain't you going the wrong way?
Nah. Schedules. Sometimes they seem as crazy as Greek. Gotta go one way to come back the other. The timetables are all which way. Besides, this route means I can miss a certain party I ain't too happy about meeting up with. Might get stuck on a spur most of the night.
Greek?
How come a railroad man even knows there's such a thing as Greek?
Well, yes.
Safest thing out here is to assume you don't know anything. It's in the nature of this country. Everybody's from somewhere else. You could be talking to a peasant or a professor. Fellas speak kindness, then up and kill you for the buttons on your coat.
A good try, but the lawless West disappeared a few years back. Hey. Damn it, I know you. I know who you are. Yeah, it's Terrapin Rogers from Princeton.
Heck. Will Carter.
Yeah, well, how are you, Terrapin?
Okay, yeah, I'm okay. How about you?
I'm fine, just fine. It must be what?
7 years this June. What you doing all the way out here?
Working for the college. I'm a teacher now, archaeologist. I'm out here digging for fossils. I wouldn't have recognized your voice.
Ah, you pick it up out here. Besides, it ain't worth the effort hanging on to things as are no use to you. Goes for ways of talking and from people.
Oh, of course. Makes sense. Huh. Well, you did what you said you'd do.
How's that?
You said you'd be a railroad man.
Oh, yeah. I'm a railroad man, all right. But I certainly didn't take it up for the glamour. You're an archaeologist?
Yeah.
Digging up dead things?
Well, not just dead things. Indian artifacts is all very tame. Oh, wow. Look at that moon.
Country's old as the moon out here.
Yeah? Yes, you're right.
That's it. They got trouble with the line.
Huh?
The extreme temperatures, up and down, night and day, all year long. Big repairs get done this time of year. Most likely we'll be here till sunup.
Oh.
Might as well hunker down. Make yourself as warm as you can. We ain't going anywhere for a good while.
Hey. Well, what's that sound?
It's the wind through the telegraph wires.
Oh.
Comes and goes. Sometimes it sounds like a person, but never takes breath. What do you reckon those wires are saying, Will? Ah, get some sleep. Dream of sirens.
Come on, old pal.
Huh?
We gotta get off.
Oh. How come?
Oh, the loco's going back down the line. We're gonna have to wait it out here till morning.
Ooh, where's here?
Just down the way. There. Station.
All right. Hand me down some of that gear.
Thanks, Rogers. Very decent. Have you got overnight things? I've got a goddamn wardrobe with me. Cecily packed my things.
No, don't fret about me. I always carry a bedroll on this line. Cecily, now, is she the girl that you knew at Princeton?
No. Although, funnily enough, she was called Cecily, too.
Convenient.
Certainly was. Especially when you're canoodling, huh? Now, where will we sleep?
Oh, there's always a bunk room. We'll be snug enough.
Hey, go easy with that stuff.
Here. Of all places.
You said there'll be beds.
No. I'm not going inside.
Why?
I'm not going inside that station.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's no problem. I'll pull some things out here. We can camp out by the track. It'll be like Army Corps training back in Princeton.
Oh, no. No more for me. It's going to be difficult enough to sleep. Jesus. It's so damn noisy out here in the middle of nowhere. Hey, Rogers. You know, it's strange us meeting. I was talking about you at Christmas. Douglas Pye? He's on the New York Times now. He's gone north as a correspondent. We spent Christmas. He told me he picked up something about you on an agency wire. Didn't talk much about it. Is that true? Were you in the newspaper? You asleep?
Nope.
Nope, you're not asleep, or nope about the news?
The thing is, Will... Old pal. Are you really an old pal? I mean, this is nice, okay? Us meeting up. But the question is, how much you'd believe? Whether you'd go back and badmouth me as a madman.
Hey, okay, it's okay. You got me on the hook now, sport. Don't leave me hanging. Haul me in. True or false, it doesn't matter. Make it up as you go.
No, I won't be making it up. If you want to hear my secret story, that's fine. I'll tell it to you. But it comes with a warning. A warning about your mental well-being. When it's over, you can tell yourself I made it up. But I didn't. And when you're just drifting off to sleep, and suddenly you sit bolt upright, staring into the dark, and sweating like I do, you'll see my face in your mind. In the light of this fire, you'll hear my voice saying, "It is true."
Back there?
Yes, sir, Mr. Hammock. How are you today?
That damn wind cuts through to the bone.
Right enough. There's fresh coffee on the stove. Help yourself, Mr. Hammock.
Yeah. Oh. Ah. Mm. Now, any word on that curtain and material? My hotel is freezing. Unless I get those curtains up, I'll be losing the few guests I got.
I thought you were stuffed full for the governor's inaugural ball, sir.
Folks with money to spend don't have to put up with the freezing wind zipping around the bedpost on New Year's Eve.
I'll telegraph up the line later, see if there's any word.
That might be what we're waiting on.
No, Mr. Hammond, it's a message
from Larry O'Toole at Grover.
Don't know how on earth you managed to make sense of that thing.
Yeah, excuse me, Mr. Hammond, while I just get this written down.
What's he say?
Just a second. Hmm. Yeah, that's it.
So?
Well, it's Larry O'Toole. He's intending to accompany Helen Masterson to the governor's inaugural ball tonight.
Huh?
He hopes to leave on the 7:30 from Grover, and he should be here by 9 o'clock. Only thing is, he hasn't made sure of the arrangement with Miss Masterson yet, on account of the dispatcher won't confirm his release from Grover until noon today. He wants me to telephone her.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. That's all I wanted to know.
Freemark! How the devil did you manage to creep in here? How long have you been standing there?
2 or 3 minutes only.
Can I help you, Freemark?
No, thank you. I have everything I need.
Good day, gentlemen. I look forward to seeing you both at this evening's fair.
Damn, that fella gives me the shivers. If you ask me, this town will be a whole lot better off without his kind.
Helen, good morning.
Mr. Freemark, this is a surprise. How are you today?
Very well and in excellent humor, I'm pleased to say, Helen. And yourself?
Chilly. This is a big house. But fine, thank you. Well, now.
Yes, indeed. The inaugural ball.
Ah.
I came here this morning because it has only recently come to my attention that you may not yet have a companion, at least one who is certain, and I wish to offer myself.
That's very kind, Mr. Freymark, but you see...
Larry O'Toole is to accompany you.
Yes, that's right.
I have come straight here from the station. I was witness to receipt of a telegraph from Mr. O'Toole, which indicated he may not be able to accompany you. He has nominated his friend Rogers to concoct a holding operation to keep you sweet until and if he arrives. Helen, I can see you are disappointed, but really I do not think it appropriate that the most intelligent and attractive young lady in Cheyenne should be herded about in such a fashion. As I said, I earnestly desire the opportunity to partner you.
Mr. Freymark, you have the advantage, as you seem to know more about what is planned than I do. Certainly, I would be very pleased to dance with you tonight, perhaps more than once. But I do have an arrangement to be partnered by Larry. And even if he should be delayed, I would not wish to break my promise on what may turn out to be poor intelligence. If I know Larry, it will be circumstance, not intent, that gets in the way.
It would be a crime to go to the ball by yourself.
Larry's friend, Arnold Rogers, will accompany me until my partner arrives.
That would be the same as going by yourself for all the entertainment that man can offer.
Now you are being unkind, and I think it best that we get on with the day and look forward to meeting this evening.
Am I being shown the door?
Pardon? Now, if you please.
I don't think this is a good idea.
I don't understand.
Never mind. Miss Masterson, I admire you even more for this display of loyalty and hope that in the event of Larry O'Toole's non-appearance, I may be permitted to add some small part to your evening's entertainment. Au revoir. Until tonight.
To declare.
Mr. Hammond, could you spare me a few moments, do you think?
Freymark, it's damn cold and I got things to take care of. Go by the hotel sometime and make an appointment.
Actually, I think it's you who ought to make the appointment with me.
I don't catch your meaning, Freymark.
Thing is, Mr. Hammond, I now own quite a piece of your hotel.
You're deluded, Mr. Freymark. Now, let me get past before we catch our death.
Step in here.
Get your hand off me.
Sure is a fine thing when a town gets prosperous. When things get ahead of steam, so to speak. The dollars start rushing in and the people along with them. A hotel like Hammond's is well placed, and you were right to make the best of things.
What are you driving at, Freymark?
You took out a loan so you could go ahead with the new hotel house, buy new furniture, new curtains, all kinds of finery. You're good for the security, so the bank was very happy to lend. Now, as you know, when a bank wants to make an extra profit, it is entitled to sell those loans outstanding where the collateral is solid. Your loan came up for auction 10 days back. I bought it.
God damn it! How come the bank didn't let me know what was going on?
I expect they did.
I didn't get a word. They should have let me have first call to buy the loan back myself. That's the law.
I expect they did. Important message like that probably came railroad special guaranteed delivery. But sometimes, things just get lost.
Damn you, Freymark. Did you hijack that letter?
I resent the suggestion, Mr. Hammond. But I am prepared to overlook your remarks in the name of good relations. Thing is, I can call that debt in any time if you default on payment, or after holding it for more than 1 year, then you would have to sell the hotel to realize the cash. That would be tragic, don't you think? Now, I believe the best way to work through things is for you and I to get together and talk about the ways we can make Hammond's an even better concern than it is now.
What's on your mind?
I believe it's time this town offered a little more by way of entertainment. I'm thinking we could do with a high-class gambling house, something that would attract a clientele of quality. Also, I believe you'll find there is certain trade which is not properly catered for in the region at present, and Hammond's could act as an excellent staging post for materials moving up and down the railroad.
I can guess the kind of thing you mean, Freymark. I've seen some of your artistic material at the club.
Not just images. Livestock as well.
I'd rather Hammond's went under than let things turn that way.
Ah, but with or without you, Hammond's isn't going under. I can take it away from you in 355 days' time. And I can make a success of my plans, and there isn't a thing you can do about it. The hotel really isn't yours to dispose of. Not without my consent.
I don't get it. How's a fellow like you manage to get so much money together? It's only yesterday you were working for the railroad yourself.
Some people would consider such a clerical job as a dead end. Not me. You're a businessman. You should know the trick. Always look for the ways to make a situation work for you. It's like cutting meat off the pig. The word is opportunity. And that's what we're all out here for, isn't it? If you don't take every opportunity that comes your way, then you're a damned fool. And that's something I'm not. Neither are you, I hope.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you certainly are right about the wind, Mr. Hammond. I've enjoyed our conversation. I look forward to many more meetings of the partners in Hammond's Hotel. But for the meantime, you'll have to excuse me, as I have some arrangements to make. There is an outstanding matter, long overdue, and I have resolved to cure the problem for good. Besides, as you so rightly put it, a fellow could catch his death. Come.
More, Mr. Hammond. I'll telephone Miss Masterson.
Shifty. Damn sideways and shifty, if you ask me.
Hello, Miss Pryor. Would you put me through to 435, please, Miss Masterson?
And how the hell did he manage to get in here without us knowing?
Hello, could I speak to Miss Helen Masterson, please? Could you tell her it's Mr. Rogers from the station office? I don't know how he got in here, Mr. Hammond. It's like he crawled out of the woodwork.
Crawl! That's the word for Fraymark, all right. Crawl!
Hello, Miss Masterson. It's me, Rogers, down at the station. Yeah, well, Larry O'Toole asked me to telephone you. He says he wants to confirm tonight's arrangement for the governor's ball. But the dispatcher won't guarantee he'll get away until noon. Larry says it looks like it'll be okay. He reckons he'll be here by 9 o'clock, so I guess he'll be at your house by 9:30. Oh, I see. Well, that's difficult, isn't it? So do you want me to telegraph Larry not to come? Oh, yes, I see. So it's okay, then. And he's to see you at the ball. So you won't be going with Fraymark, with Mr. Fraymark, after all. So how will you get there? Oh, well, yes, I'd be very pleased to. Sure, that's fine.
What was that about Fraymark?
Would you believe it? Fraymark's asked Miss Masterson to go to the ball with him. He went right over there after he left here. Just jumped right in there.
And she said yes?
No, she didn't. But she agreed to dance with him.
Well, that Helen Masterson. I knew old Senator John J. Masterson since I was a kid. Stubborn as hell. She's got her father's spirit. He should have let that girl back in Washington where she had enough to keep her busy and out of trouble.
Still, she's asked me to accompany her. And then she'll just dance with Fraymark a while until Larry turns up. In fact, she laughed and said no other arrangement held when Larry could come.
So I should hope. There's no comparing the man. Larry's a terrific feller. Handsome, open-handed, honest. Oh, Miss Masterson should look carefully at the two of them side by side when she gets a chance.
I've never known two fellas hate one another that hard.
Fraymark's bad luck, all right.
Oh, it goes real deep with those two, Mr. Hammond. Fraymark used to be cashier right here in this office when Larry was just starting out. Fraymark was sacked for some dirty business. Larry got made up to cashier in his place.
Because O'Toole proved he's the better man.
Exactly. Fraymark's despised him ever since, and he makes no secret about it.
Well, Rogers, I've got a business to run. I guess I'll see you later.
Goodbye, Mr. Hammond.
The more you tell about this Fraymark, the more frightening it sounds.
It ain't his size or the beef on him. He was a pretty skinny fella. It was the way he carried himself and looked at you. You got the feeling he'd stab you and take himself off for a good dinner while your life oozed out into the dirt. He carried a kind of darkness in him. When I was a young fella, my pa taught me to look out for the signs that mark the difference between a fella who's just mouth and a fella who's a real fighter. You gotta learn that pretty quick. The mouthy ones, they'll swing a punch for the sake of show. The fighters, if they decide to put you down, chances are you won't get up again. Fraymark put on manners, and he did it pretty good. But every so often, you could hear the slums of Europe in his voice.
But if Fraymark was so unpopular, why didn't folks run him off? You read about that kind of thing out here.
It ain't as simple as that. Folks could hate him right enough for the narrow-eyed devil he was. But where commerce is concerned, that's something else. Fraymark put a lot of business around, up and down the line. There's a lot of lockers with a French girl on a photo card pinned up inside.
I don't think you should let yourself get so involved with all this, Arnold. After all, when all's said and done, you're just a visitor here. You'll be moving on sooner or later onto the kind of thing that'll really suit.
I think maybe I should disabuse you, Will. You seem to be casting me in a very flattering role here. You want me not to be just some embarrassing acquaintance who fell through the gaps in the floor. We grow up and we make up stories so it all fits together. Now I've turned into the tortured artist, right? The guy who didn't make it through at Princeton because I'm too smart to be contained within the bounds of academe. Your personal Melville. He got his stuff firsthand. Brave fellow.
And you left to make your way on the railroad. Many ways, it's a braver choice than staying on at the college. Better than turning into one of the teachers we made fun of in our time.
The facts, Will. I left Princeton because my father died and there wasn't money in the family to pay my way through to graduation. I took a railroad job because it pays a regular salary, because I only have to take on as much responsibility as I want, and because what education I do have makes it pretty easy to shine when and if it seems worth it.
Yeah, okay. that's the way you want to play it, fine. I know you were the best of the bunch. Maybe not the most popular, but your writing was way ahead of the rest of us. I see that now.
And that's supposed to make me feel good, huh? It's meant to make me feel good that I could have done all kinds of stuff, but didn't make it for lack of money.
What do you mean, make it? There's nothing to stop you writing. You got long hours to kill, a lot of time. Heck, what about right now? This here. You're doing with me what you could be doing for a reading public.
I haven't read a work of literature in years, let alone picked up a pen. You got no idea. If you can't have something, it doesn't make you want to taste what little of it you can get. Just the opposite. You come to hate it. You don't want anything to do with it. I read sensational novellas when I read at all. Seek the company of low-class buffoons. Because I don't want even to smell the paper on which works of literature get printed. I'm engaged in the steady, progressive task of turning myself into an idiot, Will. And you don't do either of us a favor by pretending anything else. If the second greatest poet of all time was on fire, I wouldn't cross the street to put him out.
What about the first? Okay, whatever. Strikes me when the time is right. All of your experience is just going to come flooding out, and I put money on it being a glorious thing. It ain't a bed of roses where I stand, Arnold. A career in college life, tutoring, occasional trips out into the field, publishing pamphlets. I don't find it easy. I have to work hard to keep up. I know I'm lucky, and it wasn't weight of talent or personality got me there. It's a darn depressive thing to have to come to terms with, don't you think? Yeah, nasty thing about a college job is your basic material. What you teach about is usually the best stuff mankind can produce. You spend your years face to face with greatness and make out you're made of the same. But you ain't. So, what about Larry O'Toole? Your story seems pretty well equipped with villainy and oddness for the sake of color, I guess. But so far, the hero hasn't put in an appearance.
Old Larry O'Toole will make his entrance. Don't worry on that score. It's still New Year's Eve, right? Noon. And Freymark pays me another visit.
Ah, Freymark, back again.
Rogers, I wonder if you'd just be kind enough to clear something up for me.
I'll do my best.
Oh, I'm sure you will. That's what I'd expect. Hey, it's okay, Rogers. Take the message. I'll wait.
So, what can I help you with?
Larry will send flowers to Miss Masterson on the 5 o'clock out of Grover. You are to give them to her when you arrive at the Masterson's house. This will charm her in case he's late.
How did you know that?
Remember, I used to sit at that very desk. Tickety-tack, tickety-tack, tickety-tack. Of course, a life at that suits some folks, but not others.
Maybe some others didn't have the chance to make up their minds. Some others had their minds made up for them.
No, friend, don't let's try down that path. In a battle of wit and wits with me, I doubt you'd shine, Rogers. See you tonight.
Regrettably, yes, Freymark.
Good day, Mr. Hammond.
Freymark again. Good heavens, Rogers. You two getting thick?
No, Mr. Hammond.
Any news on that curtain?
Yes, I was just going to send word. You should be here around 3 o'clock.
Better late than never. Now then, Freymark. What about him? I hear you and Larry know more than the rest around town.
Well,
Come on, Rogers. It's cold, and I've done you some favors. Now, pass the gravy.
All right. Larry's cousin, Harry Burns, called by last week. He was a reporter on the London Times. He stopped in at Cheyenne on his way through to Frisco. Larry came up to meet him. Well, we took Burns to the club. And he acted pretty queer when Freymark came in.
So he must have known the fellow.
It turns out Freymark wasn't always called Freymark. He was involved in a scandal in London. Passes himself off as Jewish from Paris.
half Chinese, as it turns out.
Good God.
Yeah, yeah. Involved in opium trading and worse, in the most dangerous dark parts of London. That's how come he's got the money to buy a ranch. Didn't need the railroad job he had. Some kind of cover for other activities up and down the line, no doubt.
Guess that fits. Personally, I just don't like the look of the man. Unwholesome, if you know what I mean. He's wiry. You can't trust skinny fellows. Gray. Sallow. That's the word. Sallow. Yeah, that'll be the Oriental blood in him. And those bright red lips of his. Ugh, gives me the shivers. Looks as if he's done himself up like a woman.
Have you looked at his hands?
I can't say I have.
Wrinkled up hands like an old man, but he can't be more than 30. All kind of shriveled at the fingertips.
Well, for heaven's sake, that's something, ain't it?
Question is, what to do with the information?
Has Larry passed this on to Miss Masterson?
No, he said it would frighten her.
Seems to me frightening some sense into that young lady would not be at all a bad thing.
Good evening, Miss Masterson. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Rogers. Thank you for being so gracious as to accompany me this evening.
I am very pleased to be in your company, too, Miss Masterson. These flowers are from Larry. I'm afraid I'm a poor substitute.
Don't be so hard on yourself. Will he be on time?
Oh, yes, absolutely he will. He said so. The thing is, there have been some problems down the line, and I don't know if he'll make the 7:30 out of Grover, you see. There's a chance he might take the 9:30 special, so he will be with us, with you, but later, maybe. If you allow it, Miss Masterson, once I've got you to the ball, I'll go back to the station and wire Grover, see how things stand.
Don't worry, Mr. Rogers. It is a ball after all. And I expect there will be plenty to keep me occupied.
Thank you, Miss Masterson.
Helen.
Helen.
Well now, Arnold, what brought you to Cheyenne?
Oh, it's not worth telling, really.
I believe you're a graduate of Princeton.
No. But I did attend the college for a while. Circumstances, you see.
And how is it you've washed up on this lonely shore, Arnold?
No mystery there, Miss Masterson.
Helen.
Helen, I needed a position. I've always loved the railroad. I'm seeing America. You are a very interesting individual.
I would hope so. Interesting. What a lot of sins that word might hide.
No, I mean it to say intelligent, attractive, stimulating.
You're making me blush. And what would Larry say?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please, don't be alarmed. I'm teasing. I find your compliments charming. To anticipate your question, yes, it is out of the ordinary to have given up Washington society to follow my father here. But there's an excellent time to be had through celebrity. I was more than a little bored with the Washington round. I was a tiny fish in that pond life. And once Dad retired from the Senate, I would have dwindled to a very little minnow.
I believe you have traveled.
Do you approve of women traveling?
Certainly. It's just unusual.
Have you been to Europe, Mr. Rogers? Arnold?
No.
Europe? And I visited Arabia, too. Once you've seen the wider world and it's seen you, you've had it.
So, you've a taste for danger, then?
Not danger. Well, maybe. But in a contained kind of way. You've gone quiet, Arnold. Aha, you meant Mr. Framark. That's right, isn't it?
It's not my place, really.
No, it isn't. It isn't your place to comment on how I bestow my acquaintance. Anyway, it's not an issue. He's an interesting man. Charming. Good conversation. A walking curiosity. A little like me, wouldn't you say? Have you noticed?
I'm sorry?
Look at my eyes.
What am I looking for?
If I turn my face to the light, can you see?
Well, I'll be. I've not noticed. They're different colors.
Green and brown. One of each.
There's a thing. I knew there was something...
odd. But you hadn't quite put your finger on it, had you? It's amazing how often people look twice, but they don't know why they're doing it. Did you know Framark shop teeth are made of real teeth? Don't you find that fantastical? He doesn't have a native tooth in his head. He had them all taken out. He bought the new lot in London. Waterloo teeth, third time around. What it is to have such a remarkable thing right here in Cheyenne.
Oh, why did he have all his teeth taken out?
Well, because they were rotten, I guess.
But you'd think he'd want to hang on to the God-given few of his own he had left, assuming most had gone rotten.
I don't understand this sudden interest in Framark's teeth.
There isn't... It's just such an extraordinary thing to say, that's all.
Well, I didn't make it up. It's common knowledge.
Well, I haven't heard it before.
I can't help that.
It certainly makes the fellow an even queerer fish than I thought him to be.
Good.
But you'd expect them to be all bulgy and ill-fitting, wouldn't you?
In what way?
Well, look, if his entire mouth is full of someone else's teeth mounted on, rubber gums or some such, then you'd expect them to have a pretty... Well, they'd give a pretty odd effect. And maybe he'd have trouble talking.
Well, given we are on the way to a New Year's ball, Arnold, I think our conversation has taken a very eccentric turn. Could we stop now?
I'm sorry, Miss Masterson. Helen. Helen, this Framark business. Doesn't it occur to you to wonder what such a fellow is doing out here? What he might be getting away from.
That is, I think, a case of the pot calling the kettle black, Mr. Rogers. It's what this country is made of. People getting away from the old world. Starting over. Hadn't we better alight?
That girl, Helen Masterson, sounds like a peach. Surprised you didn't make a move there yourself, Arnold.
Are you sure you want to sleep so close to the track?
Ain't gonna be no trains coming through tonight.
And you're absolutely sure we can't sleep inside? Okay. It's a fine night. Stars are out. Pretty as a picture. How come you've gone quiet? You want some more coffee?
Shh. Shh. Did you hear that?
What? Ah. Excellent strategy, Rogers. That's some storytelling technique you've acquired. There it is. Look, there, on the boardwalk. It's a rat. There it goes.
I figured it would be something like that. The moment I heard the plate fall.
What?
It's not the kind of noise they make.
Eh?
Best bank up the fire. Keep them away.
What? The rats, you mean?
Yeah, the rats. The rats.
You all right? Well, how about that coffee? You got me wide awake and wired up. I'm damned if I'm going to let you go to sleep while I sit up here on my own listening to every fool creature that scampers by.
All right, Carter. As it turned out, there were plenty of fellas to pay court to Helen Masterson. If you don't mind, Helen, I'll get down to the station and find out when Larry's due in. Put both our minds at rest.
That's just fine, Arnold. Be quick, though, won't you? There are a lot of tiresome young fellows here who'll do their best to break my toes on the dance floor.
Most every young man here wishes he was with you, Helen. I can tell I'm a very unpopular fellow right now.
Oh, flatterer.
You are the talk of the town, really.
Awesome. The pressure's a thing. Do hurry back, Arnold. Mr. Framark wasn't very happy with me for turning him down. And putting aside our flight of fancy about my love of danger, I'd rather you were around when he does appear. He became very still and quiet. cold like an icicle. He's not a man who enjoys being thwarted.
Despite her bravado, I could see Helen was worried by Freymark. I was pretty quick about getting down to the Cheyenne depot. The 9 o'clock came in, but no Larry. I saw Connolly, the conductor.
Connolly! Hi there, Mr. Connolly!
Oh, Rogers. Hello there, how are you?
How long are you stopping for, Mr. Connolly?
Just as long as it takes to fill up the water tank, sad to say, Mr. Rogers. Only a handful of passengers, but that ain't the point. Anybody traveling on New Year's has got to have a good reason. Like as not a sad one. Ain't fair us making things any harder for him.
Mr. Connolly, do you know what train Larry O'Toole is planning to catch? Has he been hung up by something?
Don't know. Grover was open when we made our stop. But there were no orders for us and I couldn't raise anyone. Guess he must have had some important business. Not like Larry O'Toole to take himself up somewheres. Stand back, Mr. Rogers, while we ease her forward.
Flowers came up on the 5:30, okay?
I went back to the station office and worked at the telegraph sender for a full 15 minutes. But I didn't hear anything back from Larry. I had a mind to find the conductor from off of the 5:30. I knew he was resting over at Hammond's Hotel. But by then, nearly an hour and a half had gone by. For Larry's sake, I needed to give Miss Masterson a reason why he wasn't there. Also, I was concerned that Freymark might be making a nuisance of himself.
If you don't mind me saying, how come a young woman who had led such a full and independent existence was so sweet on a railroad man down at the bottom of the ladder? No offense, Arnold. After all, you made choices, but I'm guessing Lawrence O'Toole came off a boat from Ireland with precious few choices on offer.
If you'd known Larry, the answer would be square obvious. I've not found many better fellows than Larry. He had a faculty for making everyone like him that amounted to a sort of genius, quick wit, and a handsome face. It was a face that served him as a side draft, good in all banks. Anyhow, I headed back to the inaugural ball. As soon as I stepped over the doorway, Helen Masterson had me cutting across the dance floor.
Well now, Mr. Rogers, this dance, I think. Now, neither Mr. Freymark nor Mr. O'Toole has deigned to arrive. I'm feeling ill-used, I will confess. Oh.
So?
Where is Larry? I presume from your hangdog expression that he wasn't on the 9 o'clock. So when will he be here?
Truth is, I'm not sure when we'll see him.
You mean he might not come at all?
Oh, he'll be here. I just don't know when. Sorry. I couldn't get to talk to him. It's a common thing to get sent out on a guard van if there's a freight has to go onto the spur. And I guess that's what happened.
Oh, here he is.
What, Larry? He's here.
No, it's me.
Freymark.
Mademoiselle Masterson.
I thought you were out of sorts with me after I rejected your invitation.
I have forgiven this morning entirely.
Mr. Freymark told me about the wire in your office and said he felt it was a crime to let me go to the ball by myself. I told him you had agreed to look after me until Larry arrived. Mr. Freymark said that amounted to the same thing. A sight too sharp, wouldn't you say?
Mademoiselle, if I can teach you to forgive, I wonder whether I could not also teach you to forget. I almost think I could. At any rate, I shall make you remember this night. Destiny, Helen. May I take one of those roses for my lapel?
Those are Larry's roses.
No, they are Miss Masterson's roses now.
Certainly, Mr. Freymark.
What was going on? First she's scared of Freymark, then it's all charming and she gives him a rose.
That's it. A seducer. It's like he could mesmerize her. And they danced together.
And still no sign of Larry?
I had almost forgotten my anxiety in the music, flowers, and the laughter. When the clock sounded the first stroke of the tragedy, Freymark was still dancing with Helen.
my God, look at him.
It's you he's after.
Get out of the way, he's going to fight.
He's foaming at the mouth. Where's all that blood coming from?
He's shot. Somebody get this damn creature away from me.
Shot through.
How could you, Framark? Please, get a blanket, someone.
Kicking an animal when it's mad with pain. That's the real you, isn't it, Framark? All the rest is just cheap veneer. She's seen you for what you are, the savage in you.
Ah, the educated fellow speaks up. The Princeton dropout mumbles at me.
A dropout, maybe. A white man, for sure. And that's what you really can't stand, isn't it? A coolie in a frock coat is still a coolie. Will be one forever.
How dare you, you piece of nothing? The world is divided between the eater and the eaten. You see jolly pals. I see dead meat. And my nature given right to butcher it.
I'll take care of Duke.
For heaven's sake, Helen, you're covered in blood.
Please fetch the carriage.
Of course, wait here. Where's Framark gone?
What does all this mean, Arnold? I'm terribly worried. I love Larry O'Toole, and I want to know where he is. I danced with a man who came up on the 9 o'clock. He told me there wasn't anyone at Grover Station.
In that case, you know about as much as I do. Your flowers came on the 5:30. I tried to raise Larry by telegraph, but there was no reply.
Maybe he was away on a delivery, taking a telegram or something.
No, I thought of that, Helen. I tried to raise him for 15, maybe 20 minutes, nothing.
Do you think he's ill?
I don't know what to think. I'm all at sea.
She was silent for a long time. But when the rays of the electric streetlights flashed at intervals into the carriage, I could see that she was leaning back with her eyes closed and the dog's nose against her throat.
Can't you think of anything?
Please, don't be frightened, Helen. I'm sure there's nothing really wrong here. In a week's time, the three of us will all be laughing about this.
Laughing? About Duke with a bullet hole in his side?
No. I mean, things will work out, that's all.
It's snowing very hard. I hope Larry hasn't been caught out in the open somewhere. Shh. Good boy. Good boy.
Now, you really must try not to worry at all. Easy, Jim. Easy, boy. That's it. You know how uncertain railway men are. It's sure to be better at the next inaugural ball. We'll all be dancing together then.
The next inaugural ball? That seems a long way off.
Shall I leave Duke with you?
Yes.
Oh. There you go, boy.
Good boy. Good boy. But come by tomorrow. I'll have the veterinary doctor fix him up. You'll need him with you. He's Larry's dog, and they love each other so much.
Good night, Miss Masterson.
Good night.
Rogers. Morning. O'Toole with you?
Morning, Beck. What's that about Larry?
I got a message here for you. Came in early from Hollyoak. They want to know if O'Toole's still here.
Larry never arrived. I'd have guessed he must still be at Grover.
Hollyoak fellow says he couldn't raise Grover this morning.
Maybe the snow has brought the lines down.
Oh. The center's registering fine. They want to give Grover orders on the 151 eastbound passenger. This storm could tie up all trains, so there's some rerouting needed.
Oh, hell.
Hollyoak told me I better go down to Grover and the 151 myself.
No, that's okay. I'll go. I can pick up Duke from the Mastersons and be back with him in time for the 151.
Duke? Queer thing. How come Duke's here if there's no sign of a tool? How'd the dog get here without his master?
Yeah, that's a real puzzle. I tell you, this whole thing is just too strange to feel comfortable about.
How's that dog doing?
He's okay.
wrapped up good and snug beside the pipes. What time will we make Grover?
We're going to be late, that's for sure. She keeps slipping on the snow. We're all out of sand. The hopper's empty. Wasting herself. It'll freeze tonight. Wouldn't be surprised if that shuts down the service. Here we are. One mile marker. Damned if I didn't nearly miss her. That's how bad the sand is now.
When we got into here, in that blizzard, I thought it was the most desolate spot I'd ever looked on. As the train pulled out, leaving me here alone, I felt like sending a farewell message to the world. The station is painted red so you can see it far enough off for the locomotives to slow up. In that snow, you could hardly see it at all. A smudge of color in a wide, white ocean of swirling, drifting snow. Like a nosebleed on a white sheet.
You should have stuck it at college. You've got a gift with words.
Well, that wasn't in my choosing, was it?
Guess not.
I got off the locomotive about 50 yards down there. Then Duke and me beat our way against the wind towards the station house. I was covered with a coat of snow that clung like wet plaster. It hit us in waves with nothing to break them from the Rockies to the Missouri. When I opened up the station door, the snow came in after us, and Duke made for the empty stove. And he began in, howling and whining, as though his heart would break. I put my head through the trap door and glanced around upstairs. Larry's bedroom was empty. His desk was set out just as you'd expect. Everything was in order, and all the station work had been done.
But no Larry.
No sign. Looking over the papers, I saw the last thing Larry had done was to bill out a car packing wool from the Oasis Sheep Ranch to Gould & Company, Boston. The car had gone out of Grover as part of the 153, the eastbound that had left Grover at 7 o'clock the night before.
So Larry must have been there at 7 o'clock.
I copied the details of the bill into my notebook and went over to those two houses about half a mile away to make some inquiries.
What did you say your name was?
Arnold Rogers, Cheyenne.
Never set eyes on you. Ain't surprising. Spend all our time out in the line. Hardly never get into stations. And even less time in the towns. I sure love the towns, though. On account of the women. I love the women. Take Angelica there, for instance. Pinned up picture over there.
Mister,
give her a damn good inspection. You get in close, and you can see everything she's got. And boy, she sure got the lot. You see that? You see that dark, smudgy bit there? That's it, ain't it?
I guess it is.
Sure enough. Oh, yes, Angelica. You're a fine sight.
I'm looking for Larry O'Toole.
Well, he's in Cheyenne, I guess.
No, he's not in Cheyenne. He never got there. I've come from Cheyenne to find him.
Well, that's very strange. I saw Larry O'Toole 5:30 yesterday night. When the westbound passenger went through. You know, in my experience, young fella, when a man can't be found, it's usually because he don't want to be found. And that's usually because there's a female mixed up in it somewhere. A female with all the right equipment. And in working order, too. I try over at the boarding house, about a quarter mile further down. Well, I gotta get out there. Look over the track.
This weather's going to kill us if we don't keep things clear.
You going to pay me for the time it takes to answer these questions, or is the company going to pay?
This isn't an official visit.
Guess that means my time ain't official, neither. Well, he ate his supper about 5 o'clock last night. Asked for it early so he'd have time to get his station work done and dress. None of this ain't going to get Larry in trouble now.
No, not at all. What you say backs up everything I've found out so far. Just doesn't make sense.
Ain't nothing makes much sense all the way out here. Don't make no sense for a person to be stuck out here, that's a fact.
Larry O'Toole should be in Cheyenne right this minute, sleeping off his party celebrations.
You sure he ain't?
That's right.
Rose? Rose! You come here, dear. Come on. I sent my girl over to the station at 5 to tell Larry his supper was ready. Hey, come on. Here she is now. Rose, you tell this fella about last evening.
Hello, Rose.
Hello, mister.
I want to ask you some questions, Rose.
You gonna pay me for answering your questions, mister?
No need, Rose. We've been down that route already. Now, you tell this fella about going over to the station last evening.
I went over to the station last evening.
And you told Mr. O'Toole his supper was ready.
Yep, that's what I done.
And was there anything odd, Rose?
Nope.
Nothing unusual?
What does unusual mean?
Not what you thought you'd see.
No, just Mr. O'Toole and some other fellow I ain't seen before.
Another man? But you don't know who he was?
No. It's a railroad station, mister. I ain't gonna know every fellow goes through there.
Was anything going on between them?
Oh, come on, Rose. Come on.
I went in and Mr. O'Toole was sitting with his chair leaning back and his feet on the stove. They wasn't talking. Like Moore and Paul when they've had a fight.
Oh, now, Rose.
That's okay. That's okay, Rose. I know what you mean. So, maybe these two fellows were angry with each other? Tell me what this other fellow looked like.
He was standing. He had a fur coat on and he looked straight at me. Then he turned his back like he didn't want to be bothered with a kid. Some grown-up fellas don't like kids.
You think maybe he didn't want you to see his face? What can you remember about his face?
Black hair. Sort of dark skin, but not like a Negro. Not like a Chinese, neither. Sort of gray. Like something black that's been washed out too much. And he had very red lips. Like a lady with rouge.
He'd been there.
He'd been here. Yeah. Maybe come down to make some trouble. Maybe quarreled with Larry and boarded the 5:30 passenger or the later train. Got the conductor to drop him off at his ranch outside Cheyenne.
So he could get spruced up and make a late appearance at the dance.
It was 5 o'clock by now. And I was going to have trouble getting back to Cheyenne on account of the snow. The 5:30 was going to be 2 hours late. So nothing to do but sit around. I hoped I might catch the same conductor from the 7 o'clock from the previous night. The guy on the 153 that Larry had made up the paperwork on the wool car for. He must have seen Larry. Well, it was dark by that time. The little collection of houses was pretty much buried. The snow got so heavy you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. I was never so glad to hear anything as that whistle. When old 153 came lumbering and groaning in through the blizzard snow.
Hey there. It's Mr. Brennan, isn't it?
It's one frozen Brennan, that's for sure.
Mr. Brennan, can you help me out? Do you know where Larry O'Toole is?
You're a friend of his?
Yeah, I'm a friend. Don't worry. I'm not out to get him into any trouble.
Oh, I haven't seen him in 2 days since. He wasn't here where he ought to have been yesterday evening. I found the bill for the world car okay on the table yonder inside. But no sign of Larry O'Toole. He left a little note asking me to take the world car. And not to let on he'd already gone. Obviously, he wanted to get off on the 5:30 to Cheyenne. That's where you'll find him, sure enough. Guess he got stuck there or some such.
No, he hasn't been in Cheyenne at all.
Well, it is a mystery then. And I'm afraid I don't approve of mysteries. Usually means there's something wrong, and somebody down the line is going to get it in the neck. Don't get involved, young man. Or maybe that neck's going to be yours. Now then, do you have any orders for us?
No.
Are you sure?
Well, do you still have the wool car, Bill? Do you have Larry's note?
Right here in my folder.
This don't look like the same writing to me. It don't look like Larry wrote that note to you.
Maybe so. That is a sensible fellow. Sure he'll turn up. Well, we're already late, and we've got to try and make up our time.
Cheyenne office. I managed to catch the express clerk who had gone through on the train Larry ought to have caught the night before. He hadn't seen Larry board the train, but Duke had crept into his usual place on the express car, and the clerk thought Larry must be on the coach. He had seen Framark get on at Grover, and the train slowed at his ranch so he could jump off. Framark was well in with some of the boys on account he put business their way, and he seemed to do an awful lot of nosing around up and down that line. Maybe that photo of well-equipped Angelica was one of his little presents.
It doesn't seem like there was much left you could do.
I guess I could have boarded the 153 myself, got back to civilization. But I didn't. Too concerned about Larry. Don't know what good I thought I could do. But I just hung on.
Well, that's a lonely enough spot. I can imagine what it would be like in a storm.
Sitting inside there, cut off from everything, I set to wondering how an expansive fellow like O'Toole could stand 6 months at Grover. About an hour later, the snow left off, and the clouds blew away to make it a cruel, clear, starry night. I put my coat on and went outside.
Come on, Duke. Come on, old fella. Let's go for a walk.
I began a detailed tour of inspection. I went through the empty freight cars on the siding over there. I searched the coal house and the cellar.
O'Toole? Larry, you there? Larry O'Toole? Where are you?
Good boy. Don't fret now. We'll find your master. The suit of clothes that he usually wore at his work was hanging on the wall. His shaving things were lying about. I recognized the new silver-backed hairbrushes Helen Masterson had given him for Christmas just a week before.
Well, it sounds like he had got ready for the ball. Must have intended to arrive sometime.
Oh, yeah. There was a crumpled white string tie. He'd obviously tried it on, then decided on another one. And a black silk scarf hung on the chair back, and a top hat sat awry on the head of a plaster cast of Parnell, Larry's hero.
But no dress clothes. So, if they were missing, chances were you'd find Larry wearing that suit of clothes, dressed for a party.
But his overcoat was still lying on the trunk, and his dancing shoes were on the floor next to his working boots. So wherever he was, he'd gone out without his shoes or an overcoat.
Well, maybe he had another coat and another pair of shoes.
Oh, no. He was a dainty fellow about his shoes. He talked about them. I knew what he did and didn't have. I checked in the closet. They were all there. And then I found something very queer. Larry had a surgeon's case of the kind that's carried on passenger trains. He appropriated it for the station. It was lying open, and a roll of medicated cotton wool had been pulled out.
Well, your friend Larry could have cut himself. Maybe he needed to go for treatment.
Framark had been there. It was clear he'd done something rotten to Larry, but he could not have got him on a train without somebody seeing. Duke, old doggy, you must have seen what went on between your master and that devil. Can't you help me, Duke? I decided to go to bed and make a fresh start in the morning. I beat the bed up a little before I got in. I turned over the pillow, and there was a dark red stain about the size of my hand. I knelt down and felt it. It was dry, but I knew what it was. Duke could smell his master's blood. The dog near went mad, running about the place, howling and snarling. The creature was demented. Back downstairs, I wanted to call someone. The maintenance crew would have been asleep hours ago. Nobody responded up or down the line. It was the middle of the night. There wouldn't have been anyone to hear me.
Jesus.
Rogers? Rogers, where are you going?
Inside. Where else is there to go?
He swore you wouldn't.
Larry always kept a supply of brandy and soda on hand.
I thought you said you'd never set foot in here again. How come you
made a stiff drink? I filled the stove and locked the door. I turned down the lamp and lay down on the operator's table here. Try to get some sleep.
What about the blood and the...
What are you doing? Why are you lying down on the table?
I remembered Larry often suffered with nosebleeds. Because of the altitude hereabouts.
There. I said there'd be a reason for all this. He needed a doctor. What was that? A wolf? What was it?
Sounded like Duke to me.
You got the dog here? How come?
Duke died.
Then you're talking rubbish. It couldn't have been Duke.
No, it couldn't have been Duke. It was impossible to sleep. Duke kept jumping up and limping to the door and scratching at it. Close the door, Carter. There wasn't enough money in Wyoming to make me open that door that night. Bolt it, Carter.
Okay, it's done. So, what now? Okay, We're walking through the crime, is that it?
Several times I got up and went over to the door. I felt cold every time I went near it. And I fancied I heard a groan coming from the outside. And all the time, that dog sat there with his eyes fixed on the door. At last, the bottle of brandy took effect. And I dozed off to sleep.
Hell's name was that?
3 o'clock. And I woke up to hear another sound.
Heavens and saints. Who is it?
You see him? Either we're both mad. What? A man. Standing with his back to me. Broad, high shoulders. And a handsome head. Hello? Larry?
Stop him. Don't let him turn around. I don't want to see him.
My handsome friend, Larry O'Toole.
He's dusting off his fingers. He's turning. Why has he got his hand in front of his mouth?
Dress clothes. No shoes on his feet.
It's like he's frozen. His face is white and his hair plastered down. His eyes... are like gray jelly. There's no color about him.
Move back. Let him pass. He's leaving.
Why has he stopped?
To show us. Watch. He's dropping his hand so we can see.
His mouth scuffled on the wall. He's a ghost. Oh my God. It's a ghost.
Gone. Yes. He's gone. And Duke went, too. He just lay down and died. His eyes pale like dead jelly, just like his master. You see what's written on the board? O, G, and C. 26387.
I looked at that blackboard. There wasn't anything, just... What's it mean?
The car, carrying wool. That left here for Boston last night. It was number 26387.
What do you mean, last night? It wasn't last night. It was 6 months ago.
That's right. 6 months ago. Next morning, I telegraphed to the freight agent in Omaha. I told him to go through car number 26387 and wire me if there was anything unusual. Back in Cheyenne that night, I got a message to say... The body of a man had been found under a wool sack with an invitation to the inaugural ball in Cheyenne in the pocket of his dress coat.
What about Framark?
He'd already left town. Went west on the Union Pacific. The company detectives never found him.
So, he boarded the train, gone to the ball and danced with Miss Masterson with the blood undried on his hands. What about the cotton wool?
Larry was shot in the mouth. Framark used the cotton wool to catch the hemorrhage. I guess the quarrel had taken place about 5. After supper, Larry dressed and lay down to catch some sleep before the train came in. Framark crept in that silent way of his and shot him while he was sleeping. The wool car. It probably wouldn't have been open for weeks.
That's a terrible story.
You call it a story?
Look, Rogers. I don't know what I've seen here. The night, imagination...
So maybe you're not prepared to trust your own eyes? That's the college man, I suppose.
Sure, I think I saw something, but it's not going to do either of us any good to shout about it. You'll be called a lunatic.
And what will they call you?
A crank. And it's not the stuff professors are made of, Arnold. Look... I saw something, maybe some kind of hallucination. You said yourself how isolated and queer things are all the way out here.
One more thing, though, Carter. When I went to the funeral parlor to pay my respects to Larry, there he was, looking just like he did right here, 10 minutes ago. And on the fingers of his right hand, chalk dust.
Sun's nearly up. It'll all seem different then.
But the night will come back. The 5:30 will be here soon.
Why? Why did Larry return tonight?
He'll be back time and again until Framark gets what's coming to him.
There she is. Well, we'll soon be on our way back to civilization.
Well, that's progress. Leaving your ghosts behind. But they don't let you forget them easy.
Well, I'm gonna have a damn good try.
As
soon as we hit Cheyenne, I made my excuses and caught the first train out. I wanted to put as many miles as I could between me and Arnold Rogers and Grover Station. I don't know what happened that night, and I definitely, categorically did not see a ghost. But Rogers certainly left his mark. Most of the things I dig up, human remains or artifacts, they've been sterilized by time. That night I felt as though I'd been made to breathe in something disgusting. Something about this country that's timeless and dead. It won't go away.
The world is divided between the eater and the eaten. I see dead meat, and my nature given right to butcher it.
I'm talking to a fellow who don't speak. Ain't you gonna speak up, Joe? Rose? Another bottle here for me and my friend who don't talk. Our grandparents went west in covered wagons, and we come back east in Fords. Different times. What am I saying?
Here you are, Mr. Carter.
No. Rose, don't suck your teeth now.
I weren't sucking nothing at you, Mr. Carter. I just don't think it's fair getting a young fellow like that so drunk he passes out. Still, ain't no one else here for you to annoy. So long as you pay and you don't break nothing, that's fine.
Another drink, Joe? Yeah, pass the bottle. It's the hair of the dog. I met with some of the guys last month. Oh. Princeton guys. Oh. We talked about the war in France. Oh. It came out. Terrapin Rogers, Arnold, went over and got himself killed. Oh, that's the thing. Most unlikely kind of guy, but it seems he had to be there. Oh. Whatever it was. Peering in on us dancing, sniffing out Larry O'Toole. Then he went and stared at a war and bit his head off. Anyhow, I made out I couldn't remember what he looked like. It's a lie.
Sup, we'll be ready pretty soon, Mr. Carter. You gonna set it proper for us?
Oh, yes, Rose. I will behave properly in your oh-so-proper establishment.
No call for that, Mr. Carter.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rose.
I don't get it, Mr. Carter. You've got a good life and all. How come you're out here abusing yourself this way?
Oh, the halls of academe. They aren't so good for one's health as the fresh air of the wild country. Needed a keen wind to blow into every nook and cranny. You see, teaching requires a certain lack of imagination. The ability not to imagine that everything you say might be so much crap. And unfortunately, my imagination's got too stirred up for that to hold anymore. I'm sick at heart, Joe. Here. And up here. I'm sick in the head. You can't do that stuff properly if you can't sleep, can you? Seemed a pretty good idea to come for a visit, so I did. A winter field trip to gather fossils along with my trusted assistant. But really, an anniversary celebration. Anniversary vigil. Virgil. Greek. Marshalling yards. What?
Would you like for me to serve supper now? I guess your companion won't be eating.
Yes, Rose. That's good. You can serve supper now. How's your mother, Rose?
Oh, she's okay. I'm pretty good with her in Holyoke.
Oh, it's a damn shame.
Yep. Turned out she loved poor more than anyone figured. Otherwise, why'd she go loony? Your steak's ready. You want to sit up?
Yeah, I guess that's right, Rose. Come on, Joe.
I'd leave him if I were you.
No. A young fella's got to have nourishment. Like it or not, Joe, you're in my care.
Right then, Mr. Carter, leave him now. Come on for your supper.
I used to be a pretty damn good football player. Now I can hardly stand straight. Damn you, Rogers. Damn you!
Where are you going? You ain't had your supper yet.
Well, let's get over to the station, Joe. Wrap up warm. And go sit over there and keep watch. If it don't come, then we'll know the war put things to rest. If it does, then there'll be somebody else still in the world who knows what I know.
For heaven's sake, Mr. Carter, you'll catch your death.
Well, whatever you say, Rose, we'll see you tomorrow. In the meantime, Happy New Year. I say, Happy New Year!
Affair at Grover Station by Jonathan Holloway, based on the short story by Willa Cather. Kerry Shale played Arnold Rogers. Stuart Milligan, Will Carter. Tom Watt, Mr. Framark. And Nancy Crane, Helen Masterson. Sarah Rice played Cecily. John Rowe, Mr. Hammond. Carolyn Jones, the landlady. And Alison Pettit, Rose. Hugh Dixon played the station dispatcher. Alistair Danson, the engine driver. Ewan Thomas, Connolly, and Gerald McDermott, the section boss. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The music was written by Ross Brown. The director was David Hunter.